So when you arrive in the different land, you open up the glove box of whatever vehicle whatever your mode of transportation is, and you take out a map. I know nobody uses maps anymore, but if you looked at the map and you said, "Oh, where's a great independent bookstore?" A road would lead you to the Golden Notebook in Woodstock, New York. There you would find all that you need to read, right there. All the summer blockbusters in one convenient location. James Conrad of the Golden Notebook has been keeping track of the literary pursuits that are worth our precious time and money this summer season, and it is a great pleasure to have him join us for our weekly book pick segment on this Tuesday morning. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you, Joe.
It's very nice to have you. This is what I've noticed. You have a lot of books on your list.
I do. I probably won't get to half of them.
No, that's all right. That's all right.
I overprepare. It's from my old college days, I think.
No, that's all right. No, I'm fine. It's fine because they're all good, I think, good summer reads, right?
That's what I'm aiming for here. And it's actually my favorite time of year for reading because they tend to pack it with good stuff.
And off we go.
And I'm particularly happy to be here on the day of the company that will about not be named Prime Day. And which they apparently had a few glitches yesterday,
yeah,
but independent bookstores never have glitches. We always put great books in your hand. So every day is Prime Day at your independent bookstore. So the first one I have here is Hope Never Dies by Andrew Schaefer. This is kind of a book that I wish I could hold up the cover to your radio audience so they could see it, because it kind of sells itself. Oh, my God. Yeah, you know it. For all of you who don't, it's an illustration of Barack Obama and Joe Biden in a convertible. And they're racing after some evildoer, it looks like. And they're sort of the dynamic duo saving the day. And Schaefer is the author of this. And he's written other satiric novels before, one on Trump, one on 50 Shades of Grey. And in an interview, he said that he always thought Joe Biden looked like an action hero, but with a kind of a bumbling side to him. So what this is an Obama-Biden mystery. And he possibly it will be a series. Who knows? But it opens with right after they had left office, and if you remember, Obama was sort of out on yachts with celebrities and hanging out with all these fancy people. And poor Joe is home alone in Delaware, and he's following all this in a rather disapproving way, but also he feels a little deserted by his old friend. And so he steps outside late at night, and he suddenly smells that familiar cigarette smell, and there's Obama. And he's there to sort of give him some bad news about somebody who has possibly been murdered, possibly a suicide. And it starts out this whole sort of mystery caper. It sounds like it's a gag book, but it's actually a really smartly written book. It has that kind of tough guy talk to it, like Carl Hiaasen, if you've ever read him.
Yep.
It has that same feel to it, and it's as smartly written as that, too. So I can't tell you how funny this book is. The whole... I don't know if you've heard the part where they play POTUS, SCOTUS, or FLOTUS.
Yes.
Oh, my God, it's so funny. And they name three female politicians. They have to have one to be president, one to be Supreme Court nominee, one to be first lady, or I'm sorry, to marry. And Obama dryly says when he's given the list of Nancy Pelosi, Elizabeth Warren, or Hillary Clinton, give me three different names. Anyways, it's a great book. I think it's going to be a big hit this summer.
It's a lot of fun. We're gonna have him on the show. Actually,
oh good.
We talked to him. We're doing a show before President Obama's birthday. His birthday is the 4th, so Friday the 3rd we'll have that on.
Well, I think your audience will be very interested.
Yeah, it's a really cool book.
Yeah.
And to your point, he did say he's the second book's already done.
Oh, my God. That's
oh,
great.
Yeah.
Okay, because it
good.
Wasn't clear whether it was a series. Yeah. It looked like it might be.
He's ready.
Okay,
he's
good.
Written it.
Good.
All right.
All right.
Next.
My next one is You All Grew Up and Leave Me by Piper Weiss, which is a memoir. This is kind of something that's a little close to home here in Albany. I don't know if you remember Gary Wolensky, the tennis coach in the early 90s who was basically attempted to kidnap one of his students and assaulted her. And it all went down in a parking lot right in Colony here, right near the Albany Airport. It was in the early 90s, and it was a huge tabloid story for a couple of reasons. One main reason was because he had set up this literal cabin of horrors about 2 hours north of here where he was planning to take this poor girl. And it was set up with restraints and security cameras and just terrible, like, costumes and masks and all this. It was just crazy. And the other reason it was a big tabloid story was these girls he coached all went to these very prominent private schools on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And the fact that the families, like, trusted this man so much and had their daughters spend time alone with him, and potentially hadn't he gone down in flames like he did in Albany, like, how many other girls would have been, like, kidnapped, possibly? So it was a terrible story. Piper Weiss, who's an excellent journalist and a writer, she was 14 at the time, and she was one of Wolensky's students. in this memoir, she reinvestigates the case because at the time she didn't know all the details of it because she was only 14, but also she possibly didn't really look at the details because she had a kind of a complex relationship with him where she was a lonely, kind of rebellious adolescent, and he was kind of this like role model in her life and a person she really thought approval from and all that. And in these complex ways, she goes at this in this memoir, and she tries to find out, like, how, like, she never minimizes his crimes or never tries to, like, minimize how, you know, the pain his victims had felt. But at the same time, she felt, like, a love for him. And how does she reconcile that in her older age? It's basically a particular interest. If you're up here in Albany, you should really read it because the whole latter half of the book all takes place up here.
All right. It's Piper Weiss's You All Grow Up and Leave Me.
Now let's move to fiction. There's always really great summer fiction out here, and you've already covered a lot this summer and on your book picks, but there's still more and more. My first one is a collection of short stories by Joyce Carol Oates called Night Gaunts and Other Tales of Suspense. This is one of our New York State's incredibly prolific writers, and there are six stories here, and they all have what they have in common is they all have excellent plot setups. For example, the first one is called Woman in the Window. This was actually commissioned a few years ago by editor Lauren Block for his collection Sunlight or in Shadow, where he had writers take a Edward Hopper painting and create a short story kind of explaining what was going on in the painting. Oates chose this painting called 11 a.m., and this is, has a woman who's naked, except for high heels, sitting in a chair looking out a window. And so what Oates imagines is that she's a woman who's a kept woman by a married man in a Manhattan apartment. And she's looking out the window, and she's waiting for this man's arrival, which sometimes happens, sometimes doesn't. He is, you know, it creates this tension of, like, whether or not he's going to show. She has, like, a kitchen shear underneath her, so is she going to kill him? There's hints of, like, he's abused her in the past, and then we get his perspective where he's on his way to meet her, and he's feeling like, is she going to tell his wife? And maybe he wants to kill her. And this all becomes this tug-of-war, where by the end of the story, who's going to show up and who's going to kill who if that's actually going to happen, and that's the story. If I had a word to describe Joyce Carol Oates, I think I would choose fearless. In all of her work, she sort of takes whatever her subject is, and she just kind of walks into the room and seizes it and takes off with it. And in particular, when she works with, like, sexual or criminal kind of twists to her stories, she's even bolder. And in this collection of suspense, it's totally great. I have to point out that a week from tonight, we're going to have Joyce Carol Oates at our store doing a reading and a signing. It's the third year we've had the privilege of hosting her, and if you've never heard her read before, she's just amazing. She reads from her text and then just kind of talks about it and goes back to reading, goes in and out, and it's just kind of this amazing flow of a reader. And she answers all your questions, and she signs all your books. And so please either stop by our store or call us or email us and get information and come see her next Tuesday night.
Night Gaunts and Other Tales of Suspense by Joyce Carol Oates. And you can find out more about the event by going to goldennotebook.com, which we'll give you again at the end of the segment.
My next is a novel called The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay. When I first got this advanced reading copy, the information on it said this is the first novel about the AIDS crisis, which kind of put me off because I thought I'd actually read a lot of pretty good books about AIDS at this point. But what Mackay was actually attempting to do, and it was misleading in that, is that she's trying to actually tell the entire chronicle of the epidemic by focusing on a particular group of gay men in Chicago who are basically almost like a cluster group who get the initial, like, they get devastated by it because as a tight group of friends and lovers, and before there was any knowledge of transmission or any knowledge of, you know, how to, like, avoid this, they all pretty much come down with it. And Mackay knows all too well that's an inevitable for these characters, even though you are sort of reading it hoping, you know, people will be spared. And at the same time, there are still some surprises. She then also charts how these characters move out of their normal everyday lives to becoming politicized, and they actually form all the original activist groups that took on the healthcare system and created eventually all the successful drug trials and the preventative programs that ended up saving so many lives in the end. She also does a dual story here where she has a present-day story of a woman who's searching for her lost daughter in Paris with a detective because the daughter got caught up in a cult. And this woman at the time in the 80s was a young teenager with all these gay men and friends with them. Yeah. Anyways, it's a wonderful book, and in the acknowledgments of it, she thanks like hundreds of people, and at the end she says, I did my best. And that kind of made me smile because I think this was a very difficult novel to write, to take on this sensitive subject matter, but I think she really succeeded.
The name of the book is The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay.
My next novel is Tin Man by Sarah Winman. This also has AIDS in its subject matter, but it's very different. It's a very short novel. It's barely 200 pages. I love these kind of books because you can read it all in like one sitting or just a day or a plane ride or something like that. It's a love story. It involves two men and a woman, though. The two men as boys, Ellis and Michael, they have an incredibly close friendship that borders on possibly becoming something else. And then the novel suddenly careens ahead in time, and Ellis is married to a woman, Annie. And at this point, we find out that she was also very close friends with Michael, but Michael is missing. We don't know where he is. It's like he's suddenly not in the story anymore. And so the novel kind of starts to unravel where he's been and what's happened to him and what's happened in the relationship with the three of them. But what really blows me away with this novel is it's a love story, but it's told in a way like a mystery because you really don't know what has happened in this middle part of their lives. And what this mirrors is the true subject of the book, which is love and friendship. As in, like, when you lead your life in love and friendship, it's also a bit of a mystery. You don't quite understand the importance of it until you're past it. And that's kind of what the book is about.
It's Tin Man by Sarah Winman.
All right, another novel, Clock Dance by Ann Tyler. Ann Tyler is back. I love Ann Tyler.
Oh, God.
I know, she's just terrific.
And the best.
She's on a real streak right now. I mean, her last one, Spool of Blue Thread, was such an incredible three-generation story of this family. And now Clock Dance, she does something similar, at least in the first half, where she chronicles the full life story of this woman, Willa, who is a young girl. She loses her mother. She then marries a high school sweetheart. Something very dramatic happens to her husband after she's had a couple children with him. She then remarries, moves to Arizona. And this is all sort of the setup when all of a sudden she gets this phone call from a woman in Baltimore. And this woman is it's kind of complicated, her estranged son's ex-girlfriend's neighbor. So she couldn't be more removed from this. But what she's calling her to say is to please come out and take care of this young girl who's the daughter of this ex-girlfriend, because this ex-girlfriend is in the hospital for some reason, and this daughter, she can't take care of this daughter. And for some reason, the only number she could find was this woman, Willa, who's so estranged from this. But Willa suddenly decides, I'm going to go out and do this. So she heads out to Baltimore, uproots her whole life, and she becomes involved with this whole crazy cast of characters. And what I love about this book is, like Spool of Blue Thread, you have this entire big backstory of this woman's life to then complement what you read in her present day. And it just kind of makes it all the more, like, intense to read upon. I just loved it. It was a great book.
It is. I'm halfway through it. And nobody writes melancholy better than Tyler.
And Tyler's out of retirement sort of with giving interviews. She was given an interview to NPR, too, in the New York Times and all that. And she's kind of promoting books because she feels books are kind of not getting enough attention lately. And she is worried that she needs to do more promotion.
I was on the list.
Right.
I was on the list. And then they said,
oh,
no. We had a nice conversation. They said no, but I'm at the top of the list for the next book.
Okay, you'll get the next one then, because she seems to be kind of enjoying giving these interviews.
I don't know if she's enjoying it, but she's doing it, and that's enough.
But she's saying things like, "I thought Wuthering Heights was silly," and she's saying, really
"Well, at
crazy,
very
great
least,
stuff.
I have an email from her, and that is enough to keep me alive."
I am very jealous.
But if the next thing could be we do an interview, then I can die happy.
All right. Next summer, you'll be doing that interview.
I hope so. In the meantime, Clock Dance by Ann Tyler is out, and it's amazing.
Totally terrific book.
All right.
My next book, to get off fiction for a minute, is Tinderbox, which is the untold story of the upstairs lounge fire and the rise of gay liberation by Robert Fiesler. This tells the story of this horrific massacre that happened 4 years after the Stonewall riots in 1973. It was in a bar called the Upstairs Lounge in New Orleans. And on this fateful night, which killed 32 gay men, they had been open a few hours, and this arsonist showed up, who was never caught, of course, and wasn't really pursued by the police. And he poured an accelerant on the stairs and basically created this wall of fire at the door where there was no immediate way out for these poor men. And this lounge was predominantly frequented by blue-collar gay men. A third of them were actually war veterans. A third of them were under 30. Half of them were practicing Christians. Some had been married to women and were fathers. And really tellingly, three of them were actually burned so beyond recognition that they were never identified. But hand in hand with that, they were actually never claimed. It was like the symptom of the shame of the family and friends that they just never wanted to actually, like, admit that they were at this club. And in the aftermath, the city never did much to solve the case. The Catholic Church actually refused burial rights to various victims. And the press gave barely any coverage to this. And it's an example of sort of how a very marginalized group can have something like this happen to them, and it's just, it's such a tragedy, of course, and you'd hope it leads to social change. Well, in this case, it didn't, and 20 years later, there was still hardly any news of this story. Whereas when you look at something like the Triangle Factory fire or the Baptist Church bombing in Birmingham, there was some sort of immediate outrage to it, whereas this just got buried. This book is great because it covers the entire event and also talks about comparisons to, like, the present-day Pulse nightclub massacre and how far LGBTQ rights have come, where that type of a catastrophe, actually horror, actually caused politicians from all sides to sort of condemn it. And it's beautifully written. The first line of the book, which is one of my favorite first lines, is, "Every social movement in American history has a body count." And I just thought that was a good example of what a wonderfully written book this is.
Tinderbox, the untold story of the Upstairs Lounge Fire and the Rise of Gay Liberation. It's by Robert Feisler. All right, we have two left.
Two left. Let's see. The Other Woman by Daniel Silva. I'll be fast here. Do you like Daniel Silva? It's just out today. It's his latest thriller. He's kind of always, like, on the pulse, though, of stuff that's going on in terms of putting it into his novels. And for this one, we have a KGB planting a mole in Western intelligence with the goal of destroying the relationship between Great Britain and the U.S. and to undo the NATO alliance with the U.S.
I think I already read that book.
Well, it's funny because he was just on TV yesterday and he basically thanked President Trump for basically promoting his book by making it all come true, he said yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, one other interesting aspect of the book, it has its hero, Gabriel Allon, who this is 18th novel with him, who's the famous art restorer and assassin. But he's on a trail of this mole, and he has to go back in time, and he pulls in the infamous spy Kim Philby into this. And he actually uses this real-life character in his book. And when he was asked about how he manages to do this in fiction, he said, well, there was actually this seven-year period of time where this very famous double agent, nobody knew where he was or what he was doing. And so he takes that period of time to kind of imagine, like, what he was doing and put him into the novel. Anyways, it's a fast-paced, like, thriller type of read, which people love for the summer, so I just want to include it. It comes out today.
The Other Woman by Daniel Silva.
Finally, I have The Secret Life of Cows by Rosamund Young, which we've had The Secret Life of Trees, we've had The Secret Life of Plants, and now we have The Secret Life of Cows. I have a bit of an obsession with cows. I'm one of those who likes to slow down and stare at them longingly when I drive by them on the
road.
You
talk to them.
Yeah.
Right? Do you talk to them?
Do I talk to cows?
Yeah, I mean, I do. When I, hey, girls, you do like one of those things.
When I walk up to them, I talk to them. But,
okay.
And I learned something in this book that probably most animal people know. Maybe I just never knew this before. But apparently when an animal shakes its head, he's giving you a warning, or she's giving you a warning. So apparently cows are really good at this. Like, if they shake their head at you, that means, like, back off, or I don't want to get milked or something. Something's going on with them. So I didn't know that about cows.
I don't want to be milked.
Maybe not. Maybe it's not the right time.
They just came out with a study I was reading that if horses, when they do the thing, they're basically saying, hi.
I can see that. Well, and in this book, she actually goes through all the different types of moos.
Yeah.
And some moos are like, friendly moos. Some moos, like one moo actually woke her up in the middle of the night because she knew her cow was in, like, danger. And she just
she's
from
sleeping
telling
in the barn?
Moo,
where the hell was she?
She was up in the house, but she could hear the moos.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Anyways, this book was originally published actually in 2003 from a very small farm press, but it just got reissued. Somebody at Faber & Faber, like, discovered it and just reprinted it. So it's been very popular. But cows have a lot going on. They are vain. They hold grudges. They're very picky about certain types of foods. Anyways, it's really interesting. I had no idea about all this with cows. I just like to admire them before.
The Secret Life of Cows by Rosamund Young. For more information on the Golden Notebook and Woodstock and the great work they do, you can visit their website. It's goldennotebook.com. You can also find the list there. You can find the list at our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Don't forget the cool Joyce Carol Oates event, all of that and much more. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.